Welcome to Building a Better Brain, sponsored by EEGChicago.com, with your host, Dr. Jim Kowal, on Chicago's Christian Talk Radio, AM 1160. The professionals at EEG Chicago are highly qualified providers of neurofeedback throughout the Chicagoland area. To learn more about this weekly program, Building a Better Brain, or to find a provider in your area, visit EEGChicago.com. That's EEGChicago.com. And now your host, Dr. Jim Kowal.
Through the airwaves over the beautiful Windy City. Good morning, Chicago, and welcome to Building a Better Brain. This is a continuation of our series providing information on how you can improve your brain and overcome a number of difficulties and blocks that keep you from performing your very best. Today, I'm very pleased to have a special guest with us, Dr. Jack Johnstone, who is one of the early researchers in the field of QEEGs and neurofeedback, and conducts training centers for professionals around the country, teaching them how to do QEEGs and neurofeedback. I have attended Jack's workshops and have found it to be a wonderful experience that helped me get started in the field of QEEGs and neurofeedback. But first, let me tell you a little bit about Jack. Dr. Jack Johnstone is an associate researcher in the Department of Psychology at the University of California, Los Angeles, as well as a consultant to Aspect Medical Systems Incorporated. He is the president and CEO of Q-Matrix Incorporated and is responsible for all the operations and development at Q-Matrix and the Valley Sleep Center. He has studied the brain's electrical activity, cerebral specialization, neuromodulation, clinical neuropsychology, sleep disorders, cognitive development, and learning disabilities. He has authored 30 journal articles in neurofeedback and well over 80 presentations at professional seminars, including writing a chapter in Coben and Evans' book on neurofeedback and neuromodulation techniques and applications. So I'm very pleased to welcome Jack to the program. Good morning, Jack. How are you?
Hi, Jim. Doing well. Thank you. Very nice introduction there.
I really appreciate you taking the time so early in the morning out there on the West Coast.
Yes. Well, we do have the sun up here in California, but just getting started for the day.
Yes. I would like to acknowledge the wonderful contribution you have made in the field with your research and also in teaching so many of us neural therapists on how to build a better brain and still continue to do so.
Well, it's gratifying that people get some value out of some of my work. You know, my background is largely as a researcher, and over the past 10 years or so, I've been trying to use some of the knowledge and skills I've developed in the research world in more clinical and commercial settings, and education is a large component of that. But my background is really as a researcher, and I continue to do a little bit of research while also trying to implement some of the research tools in clinical settings. I kind of view that as a lot of my role is to take some of these new techniques that have been developed in the research world and implement them and use them to maximum optimal value in the clinical setting. Mm-hmm. And did that early on with just doing analysis of the EEG signal, and there was sort of a breakthrough in the 70s and 80s to try and use an EEG on an individual, mm-hmm, and compare it to a database of normal people so you can see where on the head their EEG seems to deviate from a normal pattern. And that gave us an objective method to assess EEG and brain function. And as long as we did that properly, we can see that we can identify certain regions of interest in people's brain electrical activity, and then target those regions for therapy and training. And so we're getting a lot better tools now than we used to have. One of the things that's really been exciting for us is looking at the new tools available for three-dimensional imaging of EEG. It used to be that EEG was sort of the poor cousin in neuroimaging to MRI and fMRI. Mm-hmm. The fact is that MRI, which has become a fabulously useful technique, is really just a measure of brain structure and anatomy. fMRI gives you a sense of how the brain is activating and how it's functioning by how blood is flowing to certain areas or how oxygen in the blood is being released to certain brain areas. But EEG as a technique, it has a lot of advantages over those sorts of techniques in that it's very rapid. You can see changes in the EEG over milliseconds. The changes in the fMRI signal take 5 to 8 seconds, and it's kind of a slow signal compared to the EEG signal that we use.
Yeah.
But it had the advantage of being able to be localized very distinctly in three-dimensional space, so we knew exactly what certain brain structures were doing. And that was the disadvantage of EEG, because EEG we just recorded from the scalp, and we didn't know where it was coming from down underneath. Well, over the past 4 or 5 years, new techniques for three-dimensional imaging of EEG, often referred to as LORETTA, for low-resolution EEG tomography, that technique and that technology has evolved very rapidly, largely to the research efforts of Roberto Pasquale Marquis and the work he's doing in his research efforts have really moved that technology along to be head-to-head competitive and even show advantages over other more commonly used and more expensive and difficult neuroimaging techniques like fMRI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like to say that MRI shows you the condition of the hardware, but an EEG shows you how the software is running in that hardware.
Absolutely. That's a good analogy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can have good-looking hardware. The brain structure can look okay, but it can be completely disorganized and dysfunctional in terms of how it works.
Right.
And that's what EEG is really sensitive to, right. And that's why we like to use EEG.
Yeah, as you know, Jack, I've had many guests speak about problems people have, such as depression and anxiety, addictions, ADHD, post-traumatic stress, in which neurofeedback offers an alternative to using medications to remedy the problem. But one of the areas that you've worked in actually provides a solution in a form where there is no medication that can help, and that's with helping people that have learning disabilities.
Correct. Well, Jim, we're certainly interested in trying to use medications for the whatever purposes we can use them for. And we've been heavily involved now in using EEG and quantitative EEG and event-related potential type techniques to help in the development of new drugs to make them more sensitive to an individual and make them more effective and with less side effect.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually very actively using EEG to help in the development of new drugs. But there are a number of clinical situations where there just is no magic bullet. There is no pill. There is no drug at all that can be used to remediate a clinical problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and we see that a lot in traumatic brain injury. I mean, we have a small epidemic now, not even small, we have an epidemic of closed head injury from military activities as well as other domestic activities. So there's a large issue about traumatic brain injury. There's no pill that one can take to cure traumatic brain injury.
That's right.
There is no pill that one can take to cure autism.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one pill that one can take to cure learning disabilities and cognitive problems, mild cognitive impairment. Even in the elderly, when we see progressive dementia, there's really no effective medication for dementia, Alzheimer's, and even mild cognitive impairment. There's some medications that can help slow the course of that. But what I like about neurofeedback and using EEG in a biofeedback mode is that it's useful in cases where there's no other known drug therapy. And I think that neurofeedback has shown itself to be useful in places where there's really no other approach. And it's also useful in cases where there are medical approaches that have side effects or that parents want to explore an alternative therapy before engaging in giving their kid a medication, for example, in attention deficit disorder, using psychostimulants or medications like Adderall or Ritalin can be difficult in a family setting. And if I'm a parent and my kid has ADD, I'd like to try something that doesn't have, that's not a pharmaceutical before I have to perhaps escalate to use of a pharmaceutical. But I'd very much rather try something else first. And
right.
I think that's where neurofeedback comes into play. Yeah. It's a technique that's available, non-invasive, and as long as we have enough people who can do that effectively, I think that's a very good approach for a lot of these behavioral type disorders that don't have good medication. The one that I've had some personal experience with is developmental dyslexia. In fact, I did a bunch of my graduate work and thesis work on EEG and ERP in kids with developmental dyslexia.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us, how does a QEG help you design a treatment program for something like dyslexia?
Well, we, in our business setting at Q-Metrics, in Burbank, we have people send us EEGs and we analyze them and we compare them to databases and we look at the symptoms that are being presented and we look at the EEG tracing, usually having a neurologist sit with me and reviewing the EEG with a neurologist to see if there's anything clinically significant in the EEG itself. My theory is, if you're going to hook somebody up to evaluate their EEG, you might as well have a full-blown EEG done like you have done in a hospital or doctor's office, and have a neurologist look at it. So I emphasize that, the looking at the EEG itself to see if there's any clinical abnormality in the EEG. The fact is, with developmental dyslexia and some disorders like that, we don't see grossly abnormal EEGs. We often see abnormal EEGs in autism. We often see abnormal EEGs following head trauma. We often see abnormal EEGs, typically slow EEGs, in individuals with mild cognitive impairment and impending or progressive dementias.
Yeah, many times,
but
Jack.
Dyslexia, it's not the case. Dyslexia, we often have a very normal-looking EEG, and it's only the quantitative analysis of the EEG that brings out subtle abnormalities that are relevant to that clinical presentation.
Mm-hmm. Many times, parents think their child has ADD because teachers say they can't pay attention in class and so on, and they come in, and I do a QEEG on them, and I find they don't have ADD or ADHD, but in fact, they have a learning disability. So after the break, I want to talk to you about how a QEEG can help determine that correct diagnosis and then the type of effective treatments that people can have that will improve their learning disability. So we will be right back with Dr. Jack Johnstone.
Did you know you can safely make changes in your brainwave patterns through neurofeedback, which can significantly improve conditions such as ADHD, minor traumatic brain injury, depression, anxiety, autism, and a host of other problems? The dedicated professionals at EEG Chicago are highly qualified providers who can help improve your life or the quality of life of your loved one. Visit the EEG Chicago website today at eegchicago.com. You'll learn new, exciting information on how neurofeedback trains the brain to function with greater control and stability. By learning to adjust the brainwave activity, you can improve your life through this safe and drug-free approach. Visit the website for locations near you and to contact an EEG Chicago professional. Tell them you are an AM 1160 listener. Ask for a first-time consultation. Visit eegchicago.com and learn how to build a better brain. Have you ever wondered about the magic of the brain's functioning? Did you know you can learn to adjust your brainwave activity with neurofeedback? Neurofeedback safely improves conditions such as ADHD, minor traumatic brain injury, autism spectrum disorders, anxiety, depression, as well as many other disorders. The team of specialists at EEG Chicago are highly qualified providers of neurofeedback. Visit their website for a provider in your area and learn how to build a better brain today. Go to eegchicago.com. The highly qualified EEG providers are dedicated to helping improve your life and the quality of lives of your loved ones through this drug-free and safe approach. Visit their website today at eegchicago.com. That's eegchicago.com. Building a better brain can be a reality in your life. Count on the professionals at EEG Chicago to create a treatment plan just for you. Visit eegchicago.com today.
Welcome back to Building a Better Brain. I am Dr. Jim Kowal, and I am talking with Dr. Jack Johnstone, associate researcher and neurotherapist at UCLA and president of Q-Metrics in Los Angeles. We are talking about ADD, and more commonly referred to as ADHD now, and how that can be mistaken for a learning disability. Tell me, Jack, how do you differentiate between ADHD and a learning disability?
Well, there's some commonality there and overlap. Certainly, if you're learning, you need to pay attention. And if you're paying attention, you're paying attention with the intention of remembering the things that you're paying attention to. So really, we're talking about an integrated system. There's not attention separate from memory and memory separate from learning. They're all really part of an integrated process. So there is clearly overlap between these clinical designations. And one of the things the EEG is good for is to see what is actually underlying a given individual's presentation. Now, I've seen many cases now where people are referred because they have an attentional problem. The kid's not paying attention in class, teachers are complaining, the parents are at their wits' end, what to do? Should we give the kid medication? And we look at the EEG, and there's often patterns that we can see in the EEG which we consider to be relatively typical, not diagnostic per se, but relatively typical of ADD. And often this appears as a pattern of slower activity over the frontal regions. The frontal and central regions of the brain tend to go a bit slow, which is kind of counterintuitive if you think of it, because a lot of kids with attention deficit problems also are hyperactive, and they seem to be overly active. And here what we're saying is that the brain is, in fact, looking like it's going slowly or too slowly over the frontal lobes. And we can identify that pattern. And one of the things that's nice to know is that if you do neurofeedback and try and reward an individual when they make less of that slow pattern, that seems to be rather effective. And there's now studies showing commonality among a whole group of research studies that all seem to show that if one can reduce the amount of slow activity in the frontal lobes in kids with attention problems, you can remediate the problem, and they can sit better in class, they can pay attention better, and that type of problem can be remediated with some good degree of success with neurofeedback training. And it's one of the major focuses of neurofeedback training now is in remediation of attention deficit disorder. We've also seen people referred with attention deficit disorder that don't appear to have ADD. For example, one of the real classic patterns is a version of epilepsy. Petit mal epilepsy has a component which is called absence, so the brain has a discharge in the frontal lobe, and while that discharge is going on, the person is not responsive. Sort of glazes over.
Right.
And if that happens in the classroom, teacher says, this kid's not paying attention. Well, we've seen many instances of kids who are referred for being inattentive, and when you look at their EEG, they're having little discharges in their frontal lobe, petit mal epilepsy. That's something that clearly looks like ADD, but is not ADD. There's also clearly issues with memory. I think that there are people who can pay attention. They can encode stimulation and make sense of stimuli that come in and encode that, pay attention to that, but it's difficult to retrieve it. And so the issue is largely a memory problem. And I've seen people with not a frontal lobe problem appearing to be inattentive, but much more of a temporal lobe problem. And over both temporal lobes, we're seeing inappropriate activity. And it appears to me that there's memory issues. And we go back and we look more carefully at neuropsychological evaluation, or we based on these findings, ask for additional neuropsychological evaluation of memory function, we can often differentiate an attentional disorder from a memory disorder. Now, I was talking before about dyslexia and reading disability. Now, you can understand reading is a complicated process. There's a lot of things involved in reading, and if you fail at any one of those components of reading, you can't read. Mm-hmm. So one of the things to find out is what it is about a given individual that's causing them an inability to read or read effectively. And so here we're using all the tools we have available, psychological assessment, psychosocial evaluation, EEG evaluation, and quantitative EEG evaluation compared to a database of people the same age to see if we can best characterize this individual. A lot of kids with learning disabilities do show normal-looking EEGs that it's not sharp, they're not epileptiform, they're not terribly asymmetrical, they're not terribly slow. But when we do analysis, we can find patterns that look like, there seems to be a disconnection between the left parietal region and the left frontal region. We know both of these regions are important in language processing, and this particular individual has a lack of connection on the left side of the brain between the visual language components and more of the executive language components or the expressive language components, and we see a disconnection there. We can orient neurofeedback training to try and remediate that disconnection, make those areas communicate better with one another or work in the same sort of way and encourage some common activity between those two regions that wasn't there prior.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the kind of technique that we could use to look at a kid who has a learning problem. Often these learning problems that we're talking about are language related. You know, there's nonverbal learning disabilities as well. They don't seem to get the attention that verbal learning disabilities do because they're just more obvious in an academic setting often. But nonverbal learning disabilities can be potent as well, and particularly in social interactions and not appreciating social cues and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. can be really considered a nonverbal type learning disability, and not be able to follow nonverbal and non-linguistic sorts of arguments is a problem with perhaps more right hemisphere function. But typically we're looking at what it is that's underlying this particular individual. Now, I was saying before that I had done some graduate work back in the old days, back in the dinosaur days, trying to understand developmental dyslexia. And even then, it became very clear that each kid with developmental dyslexia shows their own particular pattern. There are common patterns, but it's important to assess an individual as an individual and see which pattern they have. And that's really what EEG and quantitative EEG, that the way we're using it at Q-Metrics, is really being used for, is to do comprehensive evaluation and make a recommendation based on evaluation of that individual to remediate the problem. The other problem that we see very frequently is a problem between the left and right hemispheres. So rather than between the posterior and anterior parts of the left hemisphere, we can see problems between the left and the right parietal lobe, for example, that there's a disconnection. It's astonishing sometimes. We look over all of this EEG data, all this quantitative EEG data, and we see very, very few deviations. Everything is fairly within normal limits. And then, boom, we see one particular region that's, you know, statistically extremely improbable. It would happen by chance. The Z-scores are showing the deviation from the database are extreme in one particular frequency, in one particular region, and we can focus in on that, try and modulate that to the benefit of the clinical situation, and hopefully help kids to perform language tests, which are so critical in dealing with today's environment, mm-hmm. More effectively.
Yeah. Once you properly create a treatment plan for this, how long does it typically take for someone to correct those kinds of problems?
Well, I think that varies a lot, and I think that it's difficult for the clinician to make a firm promise to a parent or a client to say, I can fix this within 20 sessions. There are certain things that are typically more trainable than other things, and certainly there are certain common patterns that we see in attention deficit disorder, for example, that we often can train in 20 to 40 sessions, but there are other longer-term problems like pervasive developmental disorders, for example, mm-hmm. and dementias that may take longer training periods. There are people who may need maintenance training for quite some time, and there are people who, once they're trained, this is also one of the things I would like to point out here, and I'm sure you've done this before, Jim, but one of the great values of neurofeedback is the persistence of the effect.
Right.
And so once we do the training, we would like to be able to claim that the effect persists following training,
mm-hmm.
and there's good evidence for that in a lot of clinical cases now.
Right.
And
right.
There may be some need to do ongoing training for certain individuals with certain disorders, and there may be a need to do a follow-up training, refresher training at some point for certain individuals. But typically, one of the great powers of neurofeedback is the ability to maintain the benefits of training once the training has been mm-hmm. completed.
Right. And that goes for training for the therapist as well. And you were mentioning to me during the break that EEG Spectrum is meeting here in Chicago this weekend. And is
right. There's a conference where a group of practitioners get together. I think traditionally have been doing this on a yearly basis, mm-hmm. and get together to sort of share their new clinical findings and clinical information with each other, basically training each other based on the findings that they've seen and the effectiveness that they've been able to show over the past year or so.
Right.
There's a group right now that's meeting, I think, Friday and Saturday at the Hyatt in Chicago.
Right. Well, I certainly want to thank you, Jack, because this has been wonderful insight into all of the research that you have done. I also want to mention that if people would like more information, if they want to see firsthand how neurofeedback is all about and have all of their questions answered regarding whether neurofeedback is right for them, you can come to a free information seminar that's held around the Chicago area. I'm doing one on next Friday at 7 p.m. at the Ruas Center in Naperville, right off of I-88. For more information and directions, just email me at drjim@ultimatebrain.com. Or go to EEG Chicago for the names and locations of other practitioners close to your home. Remember, the brain is a pattern engine. It loves to execute patterns that result in thoughts, behaviors, and feelings. Practice those patterns that express love to one another, and we will come to experience feelings of joy and peace. Thank you for listening to Building a Better Brain.
You've been listening to Building a Better Brain with show host Dr. Jim Kowal from EEGChicago.com on Chicago's Christian Talk, AM 1160. To learn more about today's topic, their Chicagoland locations, seminars in your area, or general information, visit EEGChicago.com. You can also email Dr. Jim with your questions and comments anytime at drjim@ultimatebrain.com. Join Dr. Jim Kowal again next Saturday morning at 7:30 to explore ways to restore and expand your brain's functioning safely and drug-free.